Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the Fireside Room, Bill Malcolmson will be teaching a session on creative aging. This one is entitled Mission. So let's listen in on Bill.
If we get nothing else from this, it's least you can carry that home with you.
17th century, huh?
Yeah, I know. It doesn't sound like 17th century to me, but who am I to... What's his name? Will Rogers said, I only know what I read in the books, in this case, but let's say it together. Lord, thou knowest better than I myself know that I am growing older and will someday be old. Keep me from the fatal habit of thinking I must say something on every subject and on every occasion. Release me from the craving to straighten out everybody's affairs. Make me thoughtful but not moody, helpful but not bossy. With my vast store of wisdom, it seems a pity not to use it all. But thou knowest, O Lord, that I want a few friends at the end. Keep my mind free from the recital of endless details. Give me wings to get to the point. Seal my lips on my aches and pains. They are increasing, and the love of rehearsing them is becoming sweeter as the days go by. I dare not ask for grace enough to enjoy the tales of others' pains, but help me to endure them with patience. I dare not ask for an improved memory, but for a growing humility and a lessening cocksureness when my memory seems to clash with the memory of others. Teach me the glorious lesson that occasionally I may be mistaken. Keep me reasonably sweet. I do not want to be a saint. Some of them are so hard to live with, but a sour old person is one of the crowning works of the devil. Give me the ability to see good things in unexpected places and talents in unexpected people. And give me, O Lord, the grace to tell them so. Amen. You can carry that with you as a memento. These days together and pray it regularly. Or perhaps someone else whom you love will pray it for you on your behalf. Oh, it never applies to us. I see. Right. Like the person who goes out on Sunday morning and says to the pastor, I only wish my husband could have been here to hear this sermon. Okay. When I put this together originally, I wanted to do five hymns on creative aging because I thought that would be sort of catchy, not because I thought up five hymns at that point. But anyway... First one, meaning, which basically the point of that was that in order to age creatively, we need to know who we are and where we're going. We need to have a sense of what is it that makes us unique and makes us the persons we are. What are our particular goals and purposes in life? We need to find ways to continue to carry those on. Second was on mortality. The idea being that we need to come to terms with our dying and our eventual death in order to live. The third was on money, in which we dealt with things like what does security mean to us, what does independence and a modicum of control mean to us, how important are these things, and then memory, how do we enrich our lives as we get older by remembering things and incorporating our memories into our present and into conditioning our future. Today, this was the, I'm not sure yet if this was the right word to come up with, but it started with M. So I decided to use it, nonetheless, mission, because I'm really using mission in a somewhat different way. Jesus' sense of mission was primarily one of serving persons, being a servant to all in his life and in his death and in his resurrection, and helping us to connect with what was deepest in life, namely to connect with the kingdom and the rule of God. This is our mission too, I would assume, to help others and to ourselves connect with God and to live a fuller, more complete life with the God's creation. But I want to divide this into four sections today. First, mission to our families. Now, you may not think we have a mission to our families, but I want to suggest that in a way we do, and that this becomes more significant as we come to this stage of life. For example, is this a good time to write a history for your family? Or do an oral history? To this day, I regret the fact that I did not sit down with a tape recorder with my father before he died and listen to him tell about the past and about his family and so forth, because now all that's lost to me, because mother doesn't really know it that well. I still have to do it with mother, however, because she remembers everything that ever happened to her, I think, which is great. That's nothing negative about that. Maybe this is the time and the way to do this. I threaten sometimes to do this for my family, is to write a history of things I remember. And of course, I have the awful feeling that they may not want it. But then, since none of them have children yet, you know, maybe the grandchildren will appreciate it at least. But they may appreciate it more than they think. I don't know. Anyway, this may be the time to do that. This may be something we can do for our families, because I think it helps give them a perspective on where they came from and things that have molded them. Because I think sometimes there's a tendency for younger people to think the world started last night, and that I'm who I am and I'm unique and I'm doing this, but without the realization that a lot of the reason that you are what you are is because of who your folks are, who your grandfolks were, who the people were before that, and kind of what they wrestled with. I remember writing a letter to our oldest son some time ago, and I was telling him some of the struggles I had in my vocation as I went along, and he wrote back and he said, "I never knew you dealt with that." He said, "I'd like to know more about those struggles." And I thought, oh, good, I'll be happy to do that. However, I have to keep in mind, let's see, what is it here? With my vast store, right, this one you used when was that, last night or this morning? With my vast store of wisdom, it seems a pity not to use it all, but thou knowest, O Lord, that I want a few friends at the end, and family. I think a question we need to ask ourselves is, why do we want to keep in contact with our family? What do we need from them? Why do you want to keep in contact with your children or grandchildren or your people and whoever is in your family? What do you want from them? What do you receive from them at this stage in your life?
A loving relationship.
A loving relationship. Okay. What is it about family that makes you, particularly, that makes you want to keep connected with them?
Well, like the grandkids, you want to see them grow up and make a good thing for their lives, too.
Yeah. Well, do you want to be a part of it?
Yes.
Yeah.
We've got a son that's only 10% vision, and he can't do a lot of things. And anytime he mentions it, I'm out there to help him.
Uh-huh.
He does a marvelous job, but with some things that need help. Well, that's true with anybody. Sometimes it's a double man job.
Sure.
Woman job.
Sure. Sure. What do you want to receive from the folks who are in your family? What can you gain from them? Not what you can give to them, but what can you gain from them? Sid?
Support, affirmation, of course, love, companionship.
And you know, sometimes support and affirmation means more from family because they actually know you. I mean, they know what's wrong with you as well as what's right, right? And if these folks will support you and give you affirmation, all they know about you, that can be pretty significant, I think. Anything else that we really need from our family?
Shared memories.
Ah, good, yeah. Shared memories. Oh, sure. Yeah. That's fun, isn't it, to sit around and talk about, do you remember when? And this, yeah.
A little of that's been going on here, too.
Right. Shared memories, yeah. I like that. Is this stage in our lives a time to say some unsaid things to folks in their family? You know, is one reason I say that is one of the phrases I hear a lot from people, not just my age, but younger, who say, my dad or my mother died before I had a chance to say some things to them that I wanted to say. I don't feel that about my father because he lived a long, long time. I feel we said about everything we had to say. But I know that this is a problem. A lot of people, I think, have. There are things that were unsaid. They said, if I could only tell my father such and such, or if I could only tell my mother such and such. Do you have that experience?
Well, I certainly feel for people that say, you know, that they have a broken relationship with a son or a daughter.
Yeah.
And you hear particularly men say that, you know, they felt their dad didn't have time for them.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we all have guilt about not having done
for them. Right, right.
But I'll have to say that with my two sons, I've been blessed by having a time of, we hug when we see each other, after being gone, and I think that's important too. A lot of families have an aversion to touching, you know, and I think as human beings we need touching, and I've appreciated that on my own son's face.
It's not only unsaid, but unexpressed sometimes, it's not just words, is it?
I think when we were growing up, it wasn't manly.
You got
expression.
Yeah.
And it's only been recently, last 10, 15 years, that's come about.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. Yes, sir.
I think as parents, we sort of buy into the role that we're perfect. And I think children think too that we're without fault. I remember waking in my teenage years when I realized my parents weren't perfect.
Yeah.
I think it's important to let your children know that as a parent, I made some pretty serious mistakes.
Yeah.
And I'm really sorry about that. And, I don't know that I have to ask them specifically to forgive me, but I think just a confession. I wasn't a perfect parent.
Yeah.
And did some stupid things and didn't give them the time. As a pastor, I put my congregation first in all.
I hear that.
To begin with. And later, another fellow pastor said, you know, God made me a man, and a father, and a husband, and those roles are primary. One of my greatest failings is the neglect of my family.
Yeah.
60-80 hour week.
Yeah.
We have, you know, sort of try to have a family day once a week.
Yeah, right.
That was about it.
I know what you mean, and I found an interesting variation on that with my own father. It was also, my dad was a pastor. And he said to me some years ago, he said, you know, he said, I always have felt guilty because he said, I was, exactly what you're saying, he said, I was out doing pastoring, I was going to this meeting and that meeting, and he said, I felt that mother raised you, you know, and that that I really wasn't as involved as I should have been. And I told him what I think, what I really mean, I didn't say this just to be nice, I said, you know, Dad, I don't feel that. I said, because I look at it over the long haul, you know, I might have felt it at 13, but I don't feel it now. I feel like it wasn't time so much as I always felt that he was there and that I never felt, I just felt he was there. Even if he wasn't there physically, I mean, I still felt he was always available. I never felt he went away from me by, you know, doing that.
We had three sons, and is that when they were growing up, we tried to treat them equally.
Good luck.
And you can't.
No.
Personality.
No.
And so now we're trying to compensate.
I love it. That's beautiful.
Well, we're able to now.
Good. They must be close by, are they?
Well, yeah, within 200 miles.
Yeah, yeah.
But it always amazes me is here you go and try and do the right thing to treat each one like you treated the other day.
No, no. We gave up on that. We have three children.
Yeah.
And we gave up on that a long time ago because I had heard that too. My grandfather said, no, my great aunt said that my grandfather had always said to her, they had three sons, or he had three sons, that they wanted to treat each one equally.
Yeah.
And I learned that they didn't and couldn't. And I felt that doesn't make any sense. However, don't you still find though that you feel sometimes if you're close to one of them, I mean, you're not close to them the same way either.
Yeah.
And I know Lori and I wrestle with this, so whether we like one better than the other. And that you can feel a little guilty sometimes about that, but that's natural. You're attracted to one personality more than you are to another, right? I mean, I love my daughter, and I could be with her, you know, till the cows come home. But if it were my older son, I, you know, about 2 or 3 hours would be about enough. It kind of wears on me. Oh, well, this is on tape, isn't it? Oh, well. he'll never hear this. Next area, mission to our friends. A very good friend of mine who I've known for many, many years said to me the other day, this is Doug Clark, said to me the other day, he said, you know, he's 73, yeah. He said, I want to write so-and-so, a person whom we both know, and let him know how much I appreciate the role he's played in my life. And I thought, wow, you know, and I was hit by that today because I read in the PI just this morning and the Post Intelligencer Service, Seattle paper, that my major professor and my graduate work died September 2nd. I didn't know that. And so I don't have a chance to write to him, because I don't think they get letters where he is. write to him and say, you know, how much I appreciate what he did over those years, those very important years in graduate school for me. But I wonder if this is a time to write letters or phone words or whatever, appreciation for persons who have been very important to us over the years, because they're dying off. I mean, it's kind of hard to face that, but they are, aren't they?
But you can write to their children.
That would help.
It's a wonderful thing.
Have you done that, Alice?
Yes, I have.
I'll bet that's really been appreciated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, okay. But I think, you know, this is maybe a time to do that. And I'm really thinking seriously about that, stimulated by my friend who said he was going to do this for a person we know. Is it a time to rekindle long-term relationships? Bob?
We just did that.
Did you?
At a Lutheran Student Association from all 43 through 53, University of Washington. That's where we all met. Met my wife there. He met his wife. And 40 couples met there.
Mercy.
And we had a doing last Saturday night. 31 of us were
you
there.
You mentioned that.
And some we hadn't seen since then. And it was just a great time. And this was supposed to be part of it too. And four of us are here.
How about that? Yeah. Well, that's neat. Yeah, to rekindle long-term relationships. Because at our age, there are people we've known, maybe not kept in contact with all the time, but have known for a long, long, long time, who are still kicking around. Yeah.
Last year, my children gave me a surprise reunion.
Yeah.
In my hometown, where I grew up.
Oh, really?
And I thought I was going to go to see the Bloods. They didn't tell me, and I was just a mess. I was just a mess. The tent had leaked that night, and I was wet and disheveled. They suggested I take a bath and change my clothes, and I said, oh, I'll do that after I get there. And they all met me on the pictures, you know.
Yeah. And you didn't have time to put your face together.
It was 32 came.
Oh, wow, that's terrific. Well, you know, if a whole bunch of people come to your funeral, it won't do you any good. Because it's going to be hard to interact with them.
Well, I'm going to call a friend that I went to school, high school with.
Uh-huh.
She was a neighbor. When I get home, I called her brother in Seattle and found out where she was.
Yeah.
She's over in Kingston. So I said, well, I'll call her when I get home so I can talk as long as I want. I didn't want to pay for the call here.
We limit ours to half an hour.
Yeah, right.
The amazing thing to me, is that we have friends from different periods of our life.
Yes.
Long term.
Yeah.
And when we see them after maybe 5, 10, or whatever the years might be, it's just like we took up right where we left off.
I know.
There's a bond there.
Isn't that something?
Because we have shared memories, and we have friends in Portland, we don't see that often. And yet when we look at it, it's just like we visited last week, you know?
Yeah.
And that's an amazing thing to do.
It is amazing to me. I had a professor in seminary with whom I was very close, and I'd not kept contact with him all after. And about, many years later, he was teaching at Portland State in Portland, Oregon. And I went to his office to see him. And I'd written him, so he knew I was coming. I went to his office to see him. And I swear, it was as if I just walked out of his office 10 minutes earlier at the seminary, you know, and I came back to say hi. I mean, it was like, you know, no introductions, nothing. Just there we were. That's an incredible joy of human relationships, I think, that you can do that. That is really good. Langdon Gilkey, who is a writer, I don't know if he's still alive or not, but anyway. Langdon Gilkey says that one of the joys of old age is the inner freedom no longer to expect too much of life. We learn not to use up energy and anxiety. We learn to live with things we cannot change. We learn that most people, and this is the line I like, we learn that most people are neither for us nor against us, but rather thinking about other matters. I love that line. Let me read that to you again. We learn that most people are neither for us nor against us, but rather thinking about other matters. We learn that no matter how much we try to please, some people are never going to like us. A notion that troubles at first, but is eventually quite a relief. I think that's pretty good. But there are some folks that really care about us. There are some folks whose relationship we need to rekindle. Is this the time to celebrate the gift of a long-term companion? For example, I have one right here in front. And she has one too, same guy. And you know, I thought more, particularly since we retired, I think I've thought more and more about what long-term companionship real is. And I used to not like this term when wives or husbands would introduce themselves as, this is my best friend. And I thought, well, that's a little hokey, you know, that's a little, yeah, I mean, come on. And then I realized, oh no, that's true. Actually, this is my best friend.
This is my first wife.
Yeah.
First and last. Well, you know. Yeah. But not just spouse, but long-term companion in terms of brother or sister, long-term companion in terms of close friend. Doesn't have to be a spouse. And the joy of that experience to have a long-term companion, I think, is really something, don't you think, is really something to celebrate. Somebody who, as someone has said, knows you through and through and loves you still and all. That's
That's.
I think a lot depends on where you live.
Oh, okay. In what way?
I envy people who stay in one area.
Yeah.
The children settle close to, and
yeah,
have all these friends.
Yeah.
And then when they are retired, they have a built-in network.
Yeah.
Friends and family. Those of us who move a lot.
Me.
Yeah, and perhaps also we share the fact that when you're a pastor, you shouldn't stay.
That's right.
Serve people maybe for 20 years.
Right.
You should move away so the other pastor can establish and correspond.
All those good things.
So it's a lot harder in some situations than in others.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe that's because then we have to work all the harder. Use the telephone more.
Yeah.
But I guess I haven't solved that very well.
One of the things, as a seminary professor, which is what I was more than anything else, there were students to whom I became very close while in those, because, you know, those years are so, important. Because people just sort of, they're changing their lives at that time. And I have kept contact with some of those folks over the years. And that has been an incredible experience for me, to be able to do that. I still find it hard to think of them as in their 50s. I mean, still, or 40s even almost, but though you see, in seminary education in the last 20 years, the average age of the seminarian has gone up and up. So I worked a lot with people who are in their 30s and 40s. And so, and they get older. So, okay.
We need to treat people as persons too, and not as role, whatever their role is.
Right.
You know, I remember a couple of people that, you know, treated me like a person. It was really special. The pastor role didn't get in the way.
Yeah. Oh.
Have you had that experience?
Oh. I remember one time, very vividly, I was pastoring a church in Connecticut, and I was a young pastor, and I didn't really know what I was doing most of the time. Well, actually, about all the time. And I came to a deacon's meeting one night. I'll never forget this. I came to a deacon's meeting, and we didn't have any business. It was a small church, you know. But you met, right? And I sat down with the deacons. I was the pastor, and I looked at them. They looked at me. Anyway, they said, "How are you doing?" I thought, how rare it is for anybody to ask a pastor, "How are you doing?" And that was an I remember it because it was an incredible gift to me for someone to ask that. I had it with students once in a while, very rarely. I was with a student, seminary student, who I was a teacher, he or she was a student. And they, instead of saying, you know, pumping me for what I knew and all that kind of stuff, and I was always giving to them, they'd say, "Well, how are you doing? How are you feeling?" I thought, I like this. I like to reverse that role. But that's kind of rare. Okay.
Yeah, one thing you learn at Holden is that you can hug people.
Yeah.
I never did it as a pastor, you know, before I spent some time at Holden.
Oh, really?
I went back and I hugged people. You know, they liked it, but
they liked it twice. You go to Hawaii and everybody hugs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Holden hug, you know, is famous.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
I need a Holden friend.
That's your dream, you know.
Okay, now I want to say something about our mission to others. Kathleen Fisher, in this book I've been using, says, older persons often feel unloved, not because no one is willing to do things for them, but because people no longer value and receive their gifts. They want more than sympathy and kindness. Amen. They want to be able to give as well as to receive, to be recognized as persons who have something to contribute. Only gradually are we recognizing that one of the best ways to love any member of the Christian community is to receive that person's gifts. are our gifts being given to help other people? This is a time in our lives when, in terms of church, for example, we're really the major resource, human resource, for volunteers.
But it never happened that way. It probably will in the future.
Well, but you know, I think part of it is the myth. Part of it is the myth that a lot of folks in churches have bought, that older people are crotchety and won't change and are rigid and all this kind of stuff. And I think that is absolute nonsense. I don't say that just as an older person. I said it when I was 30. It's absolute nonsense.
Our church lives on older retirees working. We've got probably 100 to 150 donors. And it really, they maintain the church.
What a resource. I mean, it's terrific.
Yeah, that takes a gifted administrator, pastor, whatever you want to call it, to have that happen.
It takes someone who admits they need help.
I think that the problem, you know, let his wife die, and he was the leader in this older America.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, yes. I wrote him. Okay.
And so... I really expected to have a large group here, and then I read the letter that Esther, that's not the Patricia, had died just not too many months ago, and so it was put in the hands of some other people.
Okay, all right.
I really expected a lot.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, well, it's good to get that out in the open. Yeah. But really, I think churches often do not, as I say, because of the myth often, do not draw upon their older people for help and for wisdom. Our church, I think, actually does a pretty good job of that, don't you think, Laura?
Yeah,
because, in fact, it tries very consciously on a board or committee to sort of run the gamut in terms of age. I think that's helpful. Is this a time to, I'm going to mention here, I think sometimes we're afraid we're going to be rejected. Sometimes we are rejected. But you know, at this age, I don't think rejection. I mean, if so, we're rejected. So what? That doesn't mean we aren't useful. That doesn't mean we can't be helpful. It means that they're wrong. And they've seen it wrong. We know what we're good at. I mean, I think by this time you know what you're good at. You also know what you're lousy at, but I think we know, right? You know we're good at. Is this a time to branch out? Is this a time to volunteer for something, though, that really is new to us?
I did a...
What'd you do?
Well, I was helping seniors get employment.
Yeah.
And so a lady came in one day and said she needed something from her brother. And I went home to my daughters and I said, you know, there's a job down there that sounds pretty good to me. I think I might like to take it. And they said, well, Mom, go for it. They're always about to go for it. And it was a Navy captain, a retired Navy captain, who had angina, and he was afraid to stay alone.
Uh-huh.
Well, the crux of it was that I was to go spend the night with him and get paid for it.
Is that right? So you spent the nights with a retired Navy captain. Well, God love you.
I did that for a year and a half, and it was the most wonderful year and a half. I had more male companionship because he stayed at home. He didn't need to go anyplace. He went everywhere. And all of his male friends came to his house. So
you're in hog heaven. Did you become a night person?
Well, when he finally died, and I saw him leave with the rescue squad one morning, but he left me. He had very carefully all of his possessions. He had put a name on, and I got the atlas and the dictionary. And this really tells you a lot about our relationship. You know,
that's beautiful.
Butterfly.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
See?
That raises for me the question of whether you should work for pay or for free.
Yeah, yeah.
In one book on aging, the author contended that if you just volunteer, don't get paid, your service isn't valued very much in our society.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Because, you know, it's what you get for it. Makes the work significant.
Yeah. I've wondered about
that. It's true. But
I understand. I've wondered about that too.
I understand that, but with me, it's an inner satisfaction that you're doing what the Lord gave you to do.
Uh-huh. Right, sure.
You know, yeah. I cook at our church a lot. And they offered to pay, but I said, no, I don't want to do this because I'm still alive and healthy.
Depends on whether you need it or not.
Yeah, no, right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, and, you know, yeah, I've wondered sometimes about should I volunteer for certain things, that, like to do some stuff in churches, other churches than ours, because I know that they, maybe they can't pay for it. Yet I think, no, I should be paid like anybody else. If I offer a workshop, if I offer a seminar, if I teach something, you know, not in our own church, but in another church, and if I know that that church is capable of paying for that, they're not destitute, I think they ought to pay me. And I think they will value it more highly if that's the case. Now, I didn't feel that here. Here, we don't get paid to be teachers.
Oh, I just was walking
at Holden. No, we don't. Well, we get paid our meals.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we get paid room and board. I mean, that's fairly significant. And we get to see this beautiful place. But, and that's fine with me, really. But, and I think in this context, I don't think it has anything with values. You know, you don't value me anymore if I got paid than if I didn't. But that is an issue, though, sure. But, all right, any other examples of volunteering to do something that's really new to you? Like, you know, just like Alice says, it's really, you know, kind of branching out in something you never thought you could. Laurie, you're doing this.
Well. Yeah. Okay, I'll tell my experience. I'm a volunteer at the Quinluke Asian Museum in Seattle. And Quinluke was the first Asian American to be elected to public office in the Pacific Northwest. He was a Seattle City Councilman from 62 to 65. And I met him when we were students at the University of Washington, because we were both active in the Baptist Disciple Student Center. And we were also both liberal Democrats.
He was friends in the student class at Roosevelt, too.
Right, yeah, student class at Roosevelt. Well, you were there?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I had the museum was founded when he died in a plane crash in 65. And it's such a unique place because it represents all the Asian Americans, which Japanese, Koreans, Filipino, everybody is a part of it. And it's a tremendous thing. But I'm doing it because of my friendship with Wing and my admiration and respect for him. It's a very exciting volunteer experience, so I'm there really.
Bob, you're going to give an example.
Well, we print Portals of Prayer, which is the Lutheran daily devotional in Braille.
Huh.
And
in Braille?
In Braille.
Oh, really?
But we do the, other people do that makes the plates, and we make the books.
Oh.
And it's been going on for 3 years now at our church.
Huh.
And it's very fulfilling. It's 45 people are volunteering.
My
two
goodness.
Hours a week, and it lasts for about 2 months, 450 copies. We send 27 worldwide, and the rest goes to U.S. And that's all sent through the mail free, because it's for the blind. Mm-hmm. And it is new to us, and it's nothing that anybody can learn, because you've got so many segments in there. It's just like the cogs on a clock. You fit in to make it work.
Oh, that's very interesting. Anybody else? Yes.
I work with the Senior Citizen Center quite a bit. I drive the van and pick up people and help with the serving of the meals. But this past school year, the most significant thing for me has been to be a what they call a senior mentor in a public school.
What is that?
I go there and I work with children.
They host those
reading or something. And kindergarten, usually the teacher's overwhelmed with 20, 25 kids, you know. And you should see me out there trying to fly kites. Six of them. And we didn't have enough wind, so they had a lot of them.
Now, how many times a week do you do that?
I do it only once a week.
Once a week?
One morning. And spend 3 hours.
Now, what school system is this?
It's the Anoka School District.
In
Minnesota.
Minnesota, Hawaii. Yeah, I forgot where you're from, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. See, that sounds like a really good program. Senior mentor, they call it? Senior mentor, they call it.
Yeah. I actually wanted to work in another school, but they didn't have the program, so I got involved in this particular school.
I haven't heard of that. Do they have
it? State of Washington has that they call it the HOST program.
HOST program, oh.
In Washington.
Maybe that's just in Clark County.
Maybe that's in Clark County.
No, I think they have some of them.
I have a 92-year-old neighbor that still does that. She works one-on-one with a student. In this case, it's a little maybe a little different, but she helps maybe some students that are having problems.
Huh.
And she's been doing it. She's 92, and she walks several blocks to school to do that on a regular basis. I still walk by it two or three times a week.
Have you heard of that in Seattle, Laura?
Mm-hmm.
I think I may investigate that. I'd kind of enjoy doing that too. You
know, they have it posted on the school class doors. They have.
I get a bunch of letters with pictures, you know, at the end of the school year and stuff. What the kids said was really neat.
Yeah. Well, see, we don't have any grandchildren, so maybe I could get some substitute grandchildren now.
Oh, yes.
After all, I would be a very good grandfather. We just don't have any grandkids yet to find it out.
There's that program, though, in a lot of churches of being a grandfather, too.
Well, yeah.
I was going to say, when I retired in 81, I learned of a thing that I never thought I would be involved in. I was a hydrologist with the National Weather Service. And in our retirement group, the social services from the state of Washington mentioned the need for volunteer guardians. So I actually became a court-appointed guardian for two individuals.
Is that right?
One a 70-year-old lady and another a 21-year-old young man.
How fascinating.
And also became a representative payee for a 40-year-old man. He's now 54. I've been with him 14 years.
Is that right?
And once a week, I take him to the bank and shopping and take care of his medical needs. My wife's having kind of a medical crisis, which I haven't gotten straightened out yet. So I wonder sometimes what would happen. You know, I'm going to be gone.
Yeah.
Who's going to help him? Maybe he's younger. It's interesting how we do get into
that. Would be interesting.
Volunteer,
sure.
Services that you wouldn't have thought about doing, except that it just happens. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And probably you can give yourself more to this heart and soul than you could have before you were retired.
Right, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
There's a area agency on aging that is in every county here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And they're in charge of the nutrition sites and things like that. I don't like to work with just one age group.
Mm-hmm.
And so at present I'm delivering meals and I work with an Alzheimer respite group.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the joys is working at the children's department in the library.
Mm.
And you know, you're encouraging reading and
mm-hmm.
it's amazing to me, I'm there on Saturday morning, how many fathers are bringing children to the mm-hmm. library now.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife has that morning free, she mm-hmm. can do her shopping or whatever, or have time to herself. It's just a...
Now, what do you do there, Ellen?
Oh, I may shell books. I may read to a child. I may help a child locate a special book. And
I see.
A library is a great place to spend your Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
Just on this concept of volunteerism, I really got a different concept of volunteerism when I met a young man from Romania. He came and... Of course, in communist countries, everything was done for them.
Yeah, right.
You didn't do anything for somebody unless you were paid for it.
Right.
And so, to him, it was a new concept.
Yeah.
Well, he immediately picked up on it, and then he's a mathematician and computer programmer, and he wanted to be a tutor for some of the students that were doing on math. You know, amazed how naive we are in math.
Nice
and calculus in first grade, probably, you know. And here he found the reverse of it. But I began to see that America would be nothing. Our country would be absolutely zilch.
That's right. You got it.
So we don't have welfare. No. We don't have somebody handing everything out to us like we do in communist countries.
Yeah.
We're a country that does things by volunteerism.
Yeah.
They figure out the hours that volunteer hours that they may get in a county and what it would be worth monetarily,
too.
Yeah.
Huge resources. Yeah.
I want to say something as we close here about something, at least it's been happening to me, and I know a lot of friends of mine as well. In terms of, this is under receiving in a sense, but is the matter of our spiritual journey. I'm discovering, as I'm getting older, that I'm paring down in terms of my, what shall I say, my beliefs. To the essentials, and making some decisions. And also, I'm discovering that, and this is probably has to do with, we learned that no matter how much we try to please, some people are never gonna like us. Having been a minister all my life, where you spend a fair amount of time getting people to like you, you may not put it that way, but in fact, that's part of it. And not saying things that will offend, and not coming up with ideas that will turn people off. At this stage in my life, I'm becoming more honest with myself and admitting my doubts and admitting my affirmations as well, but and saying things that probably I wouldn't have said some years ago, asking some questions that I might not have asked some years ago. And I find that to be very, very fulfilling and very liberating to be able to be more honest about my faith, because I don't have to please everybody. I've said some things in our church, I know, that have kind of shaken up some folks and stuff they didn't know I believed or didn't believe. And yet, I found that this is a time when I'm sort of getting to the essentials. Are you discovering that? You know, there's some stuff you're admitting to yourself at this. I sense intuitively you're working on that one pretty strongly.
Why do you sense that?
Well, I think you're wrestling with some stuff in terms of your spiritual journey that that is really very, you've shared some in here, that is really very important to you. Mm-hmm. Maybe different ways than you did when you were younger. The loss of your wife, I think, has, you know, made some difference. But I just find, as I found this with some older people, people have come up to me, for example, when I preached at church now once in a while, and I've said some more radical things than I used to say. And people, older people, not younger people, older than I am, have come up to me and said, I've thought that for a long time, but I never had the courage to say it out loud. And that's been very releasing for me. Because I think, you know, at this stage in our life, in some ways, God's about the only one whose judgment we care about anymore. I may put it that crassly. Does that, the other, you're nodding. I, you know what I mean? It isn't so much what other people think, right?
I have the hardest time with number 4 of any of
them. Of receiving?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, my family say, well, let us do that. Uh-huh. You don't have to do that. That's your back or something. And you know, it's hard to ask other people to do for
you. Well, that's part of this thing. You remember we discussed 2 or 3 sessions ago, Alice, on independence and dependence.
Yeah.
I think it's very difficult for us sometimes to receive. But in recent years, I've become more enamored of the idea that receiving in some ways is a more powerful giving than giving.
Yeah, right.
And that love is basically a receiving of the other person. It's not a giving to the other person. And that I've learned a lot of this from my relationship with Lori, that it seems to me that real love in many ways is to receive the other person as they actually are. and not to try to make them over into something. Now, those of us who have been with the same person for a long time know that making them over never did any good anyway. So you might as well receive. But do you know what I mean, though? That the receiving of another person, the receiving, you're talking about three children. Really, if you receive each of those persons as they are, they're very different. And you don't necessarily have to worry about giving love to them in the same way, but rather receiving them as they are in their uniqueness, I think is really, in some ways, a more powerful loving. I think we've overdone the giving thing in terms of love. Does that make sense? And maybe I'd emphasize more the receiving thing. Laura, you have a kind of a question on that. Oh, okay.
I think this happens to my wall where I work quite a few times, and it's a type of receiving. And that we've had people that would retire and said, I don't want to party. I don't want to party or anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, three or four of them were madder than heck when we didn't give them a party. Oh, boy, yeah. I think it's our duty to accept a retirement party for those that we've been working with.
I think so too.
And it's just like a funeral, you know. I mean, it's our duty to
receive
not only the person that's deceased, right, but the family as well.
Yeah. To really truly receive means that you don't judge. Yeah. See, that's a part of it. To truly receive the other person, warts and all, means you don't judge them. Yeah, Al?
You don't change other people.
No.
You give them the substance to change themselves.
Yeah. No, they may change, but you and I don't have the power to change them in some kind of, I want you to be this way, you know, sort of thing. It's not wrong to receive. I'll bet you do receive, though, Allison. Maybe you don't think of it this way so much. Because I sense you're the kind of person who will take people as they are. And in that sense, you'll receive them. And not just, I mean, I don't think you're the kind of person who gives to people in order to make them over.
And you know, I feel that way about churches. Receive that minister who has come to you as he is.
Yeah.
And learn to know that he may be a good pastor, he may be a good preacher, but don't judge him because he's not the good pastor.
Yeah, right.
Right. He's a good preacher.
Oh, I'd love to have you as a parishioner. And it'd be marvelous. You mean you don't have roast pastor for lunch?
I have a son-in-law who's a Lutheran pastor, and after 25 years nearly in the ministry, his home church called him. And just offered him whatever he wanted. And his congregation is made up of a lot of people that knew him when he was younger. Uh-huh. And he wasn't an angel then.
And he's not an angel now.
No.
Well, friends, I have, speaking of receiving, you and others who have been through this class, I've received a great deal from you all, and feel much richer now than I did last Saturday when we came. And so I appreciate that. I want to thank you for it. And I'd also like for us to have a few moments of prayer together as we end this part of the relationship, at least this stage of the relationship. Spirit of God, Spirit among us who permeates all of our lives and all life everywhere. The life that we live each day, each moment, is so precious, so significant, in many ways so eternal. We cherish your gift. We're willing to receive. We're willing to be open. We're willing to say, yes, we do need you, and we need each other, and we need something to do, we need work to do, we need to count for something. Thank you for this life. And thank you for those who've been willing enough to share it with us. We celebrate them and continue to celebrate them. In the name of our teacher, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.